Well, my first question for you actually is, how do you end up Newcastle, England native? How do you end up in Moorhead, Minnesota? Obviously, you've taken a lot of different steps along the way, but I've always find it, I find it curious what led you to leave England in the first place to come to America. I know that was in 2012
Yeah,
around that, right?
2011 into 12. Yeah, so I've always been a coach. I started coaching basically while I was still playing, and was thrown into it a little bit deeper back in the day because of one of the coaches that was coaching me took sick and he developed pancreatic cancer and passed away, and I was the sort of the voice that held the glue that held the team together, if that makes sense. And trying to keep that group together, I kind of ended up being the coach almost by de facto. So, yeah, my first foray into coaching was because of the sadness of that, but also kind of the spirit of, well, we've got something to continue on with. That was an aside as a, to my day job, which, I have a PhD, went to university to do microbiology and bacteriology. That led into a PhD into bacteria in the environment and imaging, and the imaging component then became useful and my sort of the business side, getting connected with some startups that were spin-outs from the university I was working at, and then that got me into business more than the science. And then I got a job with Fujifilm, a large imaging and science company, and then Fujifilm made a project that was acquired by a German company called Leica. I ended up working for them, and then through that ended up working in Silicon Valley, developing medical technologies through a series of different moves. And I've coached everywhere apart from in Germany. Germany was a little bit tougher because of the language, and I was helping and got clearance to work with a youth team there as an assistant, but really didn't have the language skills to go full on coaching there. And I did a lot of travel with that job as well. Ultimately, the Germany job got me to California. I was installing a piece of equipment, and banged my head, and the person walking past laughed, and that was then my future wife, and that's kind of how we met. And moving to America was a little bit bumpy through the sort of those. The intention was to try and come here in that 2008, 2009 window, and the recession then kind of pushed that back to sort of the 10, 11. And I was moving to California to work for one company that got me the work permit to get here. That company kind of had some financial troubles, and I ended up moving and working for another one. And the coaching in California was the thing that then grew and developed and kind of spun me off to starting to work for US universities.
And you bring up your background outside of soccer. Obviously quite lengthy and impressive, but obviously soccer's been a part of your life your whole life. What do you think you fell into coaching in that sense? Because you had the PhD, you had an established career outside of athletics, outside of soccer, but obviously it was always still something that you were doing in tandem. Was it something that, as far as a head coaching role, is it something that you felt like you kind of, the opportunities kind of presented themselves to you right in front of you? Just based on your, just since you have such a lengthy list of professional experience outside of the soccer world.
So I guess I don't have a fear of trying, right? And therefore, I don't really have a fear of failing. So therefore, I'll go and do. And I think if I can get people to believe in that as well, like, why not? So I think the critical thing was I came over here, was coaching a U7 rec team. Literally, boys who would see an aeroplane and would fall over backwards if it flew over them. And I was doing that because it's fun, because it's giving back, and it's the same as it is now. But the level of growth that came from that was I went on a coaching course, and the individuals running that coaching course were all college coaches, and I thought to myself, well, if they're doing it, why can't I? And I think that's whether that's developing a piece of equipment in the medical industry or it's trying to make a team, there's so many parallels there that people don't realize. And even today, I met with Coach Chad, our athletic director today, and he was talking about yesterday's photo shoot with the whole of the athletic department there, and the t-shirts they got, and the motto for this year and is Kaizen. And Kaizen is a term from developing medical products. It's continuous improvement. It's a Japanese term that was developed through Toyota and through Fuji to make things better every day. Mm-hmm. And the idea that that spills over is something that I've been using in coaching for years. And to have that kind of come up now, it's also really relevant that if you get something and you can make it 1% better today and then 1% better the next day, it's not 2% better. It's more than that because of the cumulative effects. And being able to like look at that bigger picture and say, well, hey, if we're just getting a little bit better every day, you're getting closer to the goal. And it was great to see that. And that's something that I really brought from my medical background into the daily grind of coaching and realizing that it's not always a linear thing. You can have a setback, but that setback makes you learn something that will ultimately make you better beyond where you were thinking.
Yeah. And, you know, talk to me about the difference. Obviously you have experience in Europe football, but also in American football as well.
Yeah.
What's kind of the biggest learning curve or the biggest difference that you saw coming from, you know, England, Germany, and then you start out in California? What's the biggest, was it a play style? What did you see from your perspective as a coach that were the biggest learning curves? Because I know the game gets played differently in both areas.
Yeah. And there's definitely a playing style difference. I think, culturally, there's an educational difference that is on the change, but you know, it still takes some alignment. You know, when you think about maybe your exposure to soccer here, you know, we had the 1994 World Cup come here. We had the Women's World Cup wins, which has been amazing to elevate the game on that side. For me, when you start to think about the differences, I think that the eat, sleep, soccer, repeat mentality is very much a European thing.
Yeah.
That you are, like, my family will watch any soccer game that they can get their hands on TV, and it's there, and it's nearly every day.
Yeah.
I'd say a Tuesday night, we might get a, you know, might be on or off weeks. But, you know, my family will have that on in the background, or will have it on, they're sitting and watching it. And it, the more you watch the game, the more the game pulls you in. And the more you wonder, well, why did they do that rather than this? Why did that happen? And I think the education, when you get a European or a foreign player, an international, coming to Europe, they have the whys in place. The American educational system here is very much the athletic side of it. Like, if you want to go play soccer, you got to be fit. You got to be able to run. You got to be physical. You got to be have the hustle. Yeah. And when those two worlds collide, if you can get the right balance, then you know, you really do find yourself in a place where you can build something bigger than just the two things themselves.
Yeah.
There are, you know, there's a lot of options, an infinite amount of options about how you might address a soccer problem, right? It might be through the physical fight. It might be by being smart enough to avoid that situation happening. So there's not a right way and a wrong way.
Yeah.
But when you see some of the things that come out in the American system are sometimes parallel some other sports. You'll see a lot of high school running blocks that are maybe basketball orientated, where it's the physical competition of side by side in Europe, you know? So those little parallels are super cool.
Yeah. And, you know, first collegiate, you know, break, I guess, would probably be that the position that you had at MSU Billings. Yeah. Obviously, prior to that, I think you had a stint at Cal East Bay.
Yeah.
But first assistant coaching role and taking on a lot of responsibility was in Billings. And I know, you know, that experience for you was formidable in terms of where you went next and obviously ending up here. That was a huge, had a lot to do with it. And also, you had built relationship with girls that ended up, you know, on our team this year.
All the way through being the women that you see at college, yeah.
And what did that first college job do for you? Was it a confidence boost? Was it saying, I can take on these responsibilities and I can actually appropriately run a program? Like, this is an opportunity for me that I could move into a head coaching role someday?
Yeah, the first thing that I really had was a volunteer role or a very low bursary role at San Jose State.
Yeah.
And that was helping a club team that they had on the men's side. And that was really bringing some of my experience as a player, organization, that side. And they entered a tournament called the West Coast Open Cup, which is open to many teams. It's part of a pyramid inside of the U.S. to go and have more open competition between different conferences and divisions and stuff. They went to a tournament in San Diego. We ended up winning the tournament despite losing our first game against the team we saw in the final. And I think that the spirit that that team had was really the belief was injected by me, you know, the organization. I got lucky that I stood at the start of the game and I was like, this is how it's going to go down. And I talked to them about it and that's how the final went. It was like as if I'd painted the final myself. Mm-hmm. And I think that after that, we had a new expectation about, well, the belief in what we were doing together was also there.
Yeah.
You know, rather than just being some guy who was helping out, like the way that that final went in winning it, after having lost it to a team 3-0 early in the competition, yeah. It was really this, you know, huge. And then the next year we went from strength to strength again. We won, beat six teams that we'd never even got a tie against before. You know, that really like elevated like the notice for me as a coach in the area. And then some of those players went on to win scholarships at other universities and internally. And I think that got me the sort of a reputation to be able to say, well, hey, he can bridge the gap between finding somebody who's, you know, doing okay or, you know, partly in soccer to then committing to raise the level and jump up. I went on a coaching course and met the head coach at Cal State East Bay. I met the coach who was the men's head coach at Billings, and that brought some connectivity. I then did the coaching test to be able to go and help. You know, my first real role with Billings was they came on a California tour and I drove the vans.
Yeah.
I just helped them.
Yeah.
And if somebody wants to get into the college game, going and volunteering, going and giving time and doing more than the job you have is a way to grow your job in the college coaching game. And I got really lucky that I got to, on that trip, I got to coach some of the team that didn't play the day before, so I could really work them. And then a guy was watching and went and told the head coach, hey, this guy knows what he's doing. And that kind of grew my role then to then be able to move to Billings and be an assistant, you know, not quite full time, but 0.75 and try to get benefits in the way that it works. And I had a really, you know, positive partner at the time who balanced out, you know, if I wasn't earning much money in the college game, she was, and vice versa, so that we balanced each other's kind of career changes that were both happening in that window. And, you know, moving to Montana made the cost of life easier.
Yeah.
Right. Sure. So then being there and stepping in. I will say this, going to Billings was an amazing experience because I had the support from the head coach there when I moved over to the women's side to really do everything that you needed to do as a head coach. Mm-hmm. But I will tell you, no matter how long you spend as an assistant, no matter how much things, how many things you've done as an assistant that the head coach does, you're never ready to be a head coach.
Yeah.
You have to kind of throw yourself in there and hope you survive. And that in moving to West Virginia, that was definitely the experience there.
And, you know, that's the point that I wanted to touch on, Nick. You talk about you're never ready to be a head coach.
Yeah.
But in your case, I don't think anybody's ever ready to be a head coach of a brand new program at a school without a conference affiliation, which is the situation that you're in at Bluefield State.
Yeah.
And talk to me about the initial challenges of coming in there and having to create a schedule, having to... Yeah. Build a roster from scratch. I mean, there's so many dynamics to that role that head coaches aren't dealing with around the country, right? Because you're building a program from the ground up. What were the biggest challenges for you, and kind of what did you learn about yourself maybe in that situation? Because I'm sure there's plenty of life lessons you took away to say, I'm going to do this here, I'm going to do this later.
Yeah, I think without blowing my own trumpet, I think it was at the right time of my life. I was relocating, you know, my wife and I had parted and we're still friends and happy. But in that moment, there was no other commitment that I needed to be given. So what was I doing? You know, I was stepping into a job that I've dreamed about and that I wanted to do in a field that I love, doing things that make you happy. So I think pouring all of the energy I had into that job was really super awesome, but it was also probably more time and energy than I, even looking back, I'm not sure how I did it at times. One of my references describes me as relentless, and I think that I never really understood what he meant by that until I got through that first year at Bluefield. And, you know, going and the challenge of setting up a schedule when you don't have that is you've got one set of conferences very nearby that has 18 teams in it that then they play nobody in non-conference, right? The 16 teams rather. So, you know, and coming out of COVID, there was a lot of teams that had contracted games waiting to be postponed. Yeah. So it was a tough place. South of us, there was a conference that had a bye week. So I just went and harassed every bye week coach, you know, and gave them a return. So it kind of flip flopped and, you know, asked them for help and called upon coaching friends who knew them. And, you know, the network is a small network, right? If you can get into that network and make, you know, and once we played a game, the next year was easier because they knew we weren't going to go and stamp and kick and bite and scrape. We were trying to play.
Yeah.
And once you demonstrate that, other coaches are like, well, hey, this is going to be okay if we play them. I'm not going to lose players to injuries or to, you know, that side of the game. So I went from probably 3 months of constant work every day trying to get a new team on the schedule to the next year was probably a 3 week job.
Yeah.
And then the third year was probably a 3 day job with returns. Yeah. And, you know, so it was a really logarithmic drop in the energy that you needed to do that for. But when it was first year set up, when it was trying to get players in, you know, I probably made 500 plus offers to players to come and be part of that program to get the 25 people in that door.
Yeah.
And that's more than the 10 years of the, you know, the operations that I knew about Billings. So, you know, to spill that around, it's kind of, it's a tough place to walk through. But you have to recognize as a coach that, like, somebody saying no is as valid as somebody saying yes. Mm. You know, can you learn from why they say no? Maybe. Can you help them, you know, find the right home that's not, if it's not you? Yes. And if you just have that honesty and openness in that recruiting process, you can get through that. Yeah.
And, you know, from that point of view, just building a schedule without a conference affiliation, you obviously have the opportunity to play anybody and everybody. And you referenced, you know, a conference that, you know, doesn't schedule difficult non-conference games. You didn't do that. You played tough schools. You made the you know, choice to say we're going to play the top of Division II and beyond.
Yep.
Was there a reasoning behind that? Was it saying, okay, let's put these players to the fire right away and see what they're about and kind of cultivate your culture around that a little bit?
You know, I always say that you learn more from a 3-0 defeat than you ever will a 3-0 victory. And I would rather go and play a top team and set a standard for a freshman or a person who's joining your program than to go and win and it just be a simple, you know, wash your hands, go home.
Yeah.
The kids will go home, you know, the team will go home and smile, right? But at the end of the day, like, did we get better? You know, where's the value in that? If you haven't gone and said, well, hey, we're actually going to make some improvement in what we do today. And again, it goes back to the Kaizen approach. Like, yes, we went and played some teams that were way above our level, but we learned that day something valuable in how to approach a game. And, you know, we got 15 wins. That's crazy, you know, to go and be able to play teams that were top 20 in the country. And it wasn't embarrassing. It was the team coming off the field with smiles and like, we've got them next time. That was kind of the cool thing about doing that.
Yeah.
Some people thought I was mad. I'm not going to lie. You know,
I think that goes for maybe some.
That's still fair.
A few people.
Yeah, that's still valid. Yeah, even today. Yeah, and in some ways I am, because, you know, even the team here, I believe in people maybe more than they believe in themselves, and that's a hard thing to say sometimes. But, you know, what groups can achieve together when they're pulling in the same direction, is even more valuable. There's a great one with Belgian draft horses. I don't know whether you know this. If you take a Belgian draft horse, these things weigh, you know, a couple of thousand pounds, and they strap them to pull carts. And if you load that cart up with one horse, it can pull around, you know, 4,500 pounds.
Yeah.
If you put two on there, you think, well, it should be like pulling maybe 9 or something. It pulls 12. Because the two horses next to each other are fighting to be the dominant horse, right?
Yeah.
And then give them a couple of weeks of working together and they can pull 15. Because they're now pulling, knowing they're trusting each other and knowing that they've got the energy for it. And I love that, right? If we can say, hey, if we can build a layer of trust where we can be vulnerable with each other, where we can lean on each other, we can ask for each other's help, right? That translates to amazing things when you get onto the soccer field.
Yeah.
And, you know, tell me about this job, when it came available.
Yeah.
Did it almost seem like I don't want to say an easier fit, because obviously you're coming from Bluefield where you had to build from the ground up.
Yeah.
But somewhat of a similar scenario here where you're kind of starting fresh, obviously a program that wants to see improvement in the win-loss fixtures.
Yeah.
What was your thought process when you saw our job come about, and what possessed you to say, this is a role that would fit me in my coaching style?
Yeah. A friend of mine pointed out the job opening and said, look, this is something you got to think about. Yeah. I'd never been to Moorhead before, and I've been to the Fargo area. I never played the team. One of my friends had come here and had played, I think played a back and forth, and had literally said to me, like, you go and have a look at the facilities online, apply and see what happens. And when I came for an interview, I instantaneously felt at home in the area. Like, I've grown up around hills and mountains and greenery and a feel that's there, and I've gone through Montana winters and it wasn't really much of a problem, but in my brain it was like, I was worried that it would be really like flat. Mm-hmm. And just that was something that turned me off to accepting jobs in Chicago before. You know, I couldn't manage in my brain why there wasn't a mountain to reference where I was.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So coming here, I had that concern, but I arrived and like, it reminds me, you know, Minnesota and this side of North Dakota, the people remind me of the north of England. They have a heart to them, and if they see you on the side of the road with a flat tire, they are stopping and helping. They are not just driving by. And you know, I came and I was looking at, you know, houses when I accepted the job here, and like the doors were open.
Yeah.
And just, you could go, like, went and show me around. Oh yeah, the house is open, like that. And it reminded me of back home a little bit. So there was this comfort in how people in this area look after themselves, look after each other. When I saw the facilities here, you know, I moved to Bluefield to be a founding head coach, where there was bringing things to a program that had never been before, right? I had recruited every single individual to that program, and the hardest thing was the decision to leave the people behind there. And West Virginia is the same. West Virginia, there's a spirit and a community. It's a coal mining town, which is where I grew up. You know, it was very hard to say, hey, I'm going to park that and move on. Mm. Right? But when you see the weight room here, when you see the facilities that student athletes have access to, and the support that I felt from Chad and the team here when I interviewed was so much more than just having people around you, right? Just this week, I've had other members of the coaching team change their schedule or change their practice locations to help out soccer.
Yeah.
Like, that is, that community that's here is so awesome as a staff that it allowed me to get a feel for the potential here. Was there going to be big challenges? Yes. Were we going to have to raise expectations and raise the bar on the playing side? Yes. But that's a project that I knew we could do. And with having the facilities here to attract players and the support here, and hats off to anybody watching this from the academic and the administration side of the house, because that for me is such a cool thing about this school, that I've never had to call admissions and check on where one of my applicants are. I've never had to follow up with housing. I've never had to go and chase a piece of paperwork here. It's all managed to an elite level that makes a difference for me, and it frees up my time to not have to go and do the paperwork, to not have to go and help a student get into the school, to not have to go and check the international admissions process or anything at all, really. You know, so what have I got to focus on? My team and coaching. And that's just such a relief. And it's been a journey to get here.
Yeah.
But like, what a great place to be.
And talk to me about, you know, your senior class this year, because several of them are holdovers before you were here. I think of like Lily Johnson, Blake Hurley, Quinn Carter, a huge senior group. Brooklyn Broderick, another one that's coming back from injury this year. Talk to me about how they helped your transition, because they knew the past regime. Now you're the new regime. How did they help bridge the gap for you in that first season, maybe specifically? And as you've headed into your first full off season now, heading into first game here this week.
Yeah, we've got eight seniors this year. Five came here as freshmen. And the rest have been transfers or people who've come into the program just before I got here or when I've got here. And I have to say that the energy and the alignment that they found amongst themselves is awesome. There's a continuity that other people have bought into. But also, I think changing the expectations last year really helped set the standard for this year. So I can't thank they call themselves the Fab Five, but they're the ones who came here as freshmen and have lived it, right? Yeah. And they've seen the transition and they've seen the change. And they've seen the school grow. They've seen the weight room open. They've seen the other things that have come about and how we can address the problem. And they come with suggestions as well. You know, hey, coach, like, Saturday trainings, can we change the time of that? Because we'd like to be able to get out and do something after training and, you know, not just socially, but also as a team. And, you know, coming and asking about how to change what we're doing for maybe a food on a specific visit or something like that. It's really opening and I love the accommodation of that as well. I want that to be in our culture. That it's not just, oh, well, coach has said I can't change that, you know, because I'm not perfect. I don't expect them to be perfect. But as I say, I want us to try and make those improvements that make this program better. And to hear that the first, you know, that this week was our first session in the weight room, new strength and conditioning coach, we've got 12 new people to the weight room today on yesterday. And to see them have a senior or an upperclassman to be able to say, hey, this is the standard of the things that we do in the weight room. We don't mess around with that. We get on with it and we can have a giggle when it's done, but we're going to knock this little part of our mini session out and then we'll laugh and joke and enjoy it as we've done it. And like seeing that sort of spread out to, you know, a freshman group as well, that was super cool too. And yeah, hats off to all of those five who've, you know, were born to be dragons. And not only have been great dragons coming through the program, they've also put down roots to help others as well.
Yeah.
We have a thing called Dragon Mom. I don't know, historically, if somebody knows, I don't know who created this inside of the program. It was here before I got here, and it'll be here after I've gone. But when a player commits to the program, they get allocated a player inside of the program that is their Dragon Mom. And that is culturally something that helps. It's spiritually something that helps, right? You can ask the silly questions. You can find out, what does this mean?
Yeah.
What have I got to bring? What is that? How does that work? And it's not feeling like you're as exposed. And even just hearing some of the stories of, like, you know, people who've maybe gone out and got into trouble, their car's broken down, or they got to Walmart, they bought a set of drawers that doesn't fit in their car anymore.
Yeah.
You know, calling Dragon Mom with their truck to come pick it up. Like, that's a cool thing to have in your program. And I got really super emotional on media day seeing a great grandma, a grandma and a mom and a baby all in the same photograph. And like the team acknowledging that in training, like when we get, if it's on the same team or the versus each other, it kind of elevates the practice as a reminder of that level of competition too. So it's a really, really cool part of what we do.
And tell me about your recruiting process in that first off season, because obviously whenever there's a new coach turnover, there's always an exodus of players that are looking for other opportunities. And, and you were faced with a scenario like that where you needed to kind of build a roster.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me about your recruiting strategy, because you touched points that of areas throughout the world that, you know, we haven't had. I mean, Sophie Thompson from New Zealand. I mean,
you know,
Mary Cox from Colorado, Madeline Hopkins from Colorado.
Yeah.
Areas that we haven't touched as a program before. What was kind of your strategy heading into your first fall, knowing that you had to bring in and rely on quite a few freshmen?
Yeah. No, there's a little bit of a baptism of fire in that I was promoted to recruiting coordinator in Billings. So I was running all of their and streamlining their processes. So building databases, building connections with junior colleges, with international recruitment agencies, you know, and I guess what helped me in my second job there was matching up the recruits to the roles. So I think I see something in somebody that okay, if I could take that slice and I could move it there, that might give me somebody who fits into my system. And if that works for the head coach, great. And in explaining that, we really built up and filled, which then was the 2021 and 2022 classes. That then gave me a huge list of players and people that was available to me, an experience that I carried straight into my head coach's job. And I don't think anybody else would have gone as prepared as I was, having already filled the 21 and 22 class somewhere else, to then know what I needed to recruit.
Yeah.
So that was a great start. And I think the second time you do something, hopefully you're better at it, right? And that was where I arrived. I had five commits already to the program, and I wanted to honor those. You know, I'm not going to disrupt somebody's life in that short-term changeover of coaches. And you know, that was tough because there was some challenges in that recruitment process to say, well, hey, you know, when you talk to somebody, well, I'm not your recruit. Well, you are now.
Yeah.
You are now. Let's go.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'd say half of those, three are still here and raising the game. And then the same for my recruits. I brought in five, half of those, three of those have stayed as well. So, you know, there's the pressure of going to college, the pressure of as a freshman. And if there's any freshman watching this, if you're going to go to college next year, you will have a wobble. We call it the wobble. Something will come along that will bite you. It'll either be your academics, moving to a new geographical location, homesickness, boyfriends, girlfriends. You know, there's a whole laundry list of things that we talk about that can come up and just grab you, and that's the wobble. And every freshman has it. You had one, I had one, everybody has one as a freshman, and you've got to navigate it. And it's just knowing the expectation there. And I think that I didn't really get that messaging to the whole of that group as maybe as quick as we could. Mm-hmm. And so there was a few who didn't survive that. And that happens. And I wish them the best in what they do. I actually had one call me up and thank me and say, you were right. I needed to have that happen for me to go and do what I wanted to do. And that's refreshing as a coach. Yeah. That sometimes it's a challenge to have those conversations and, you know, not avoid them. You know, be honest and open about what's going on and where we can help and support, but also what doesn't make sense anymore. And getting that through that first year was a challenge, because it was also, you know, I arrived here and I didn't know the recruits, some of them, and I was still learning names of teams and players in the team.
Yeah.
And to then go and have some of the trips that we had a long trip down into multiple states away for a four-night overstay, another one into Nebraska. It was a lot physically, a lot mentally. And, you know, what really did though was it created this sort of little cauldron, and the heat, if we can survive the heat of that and we've got through that, we can do things together.
And, you know, talk to me about, you know, you just said going through that first season had its challenges, obviously. Yep. No, without question. You know, you're implementing a new formation, you're implementing a new style of play, and, you know, I think anybody who watched our games throughout the course of the year last year saw that by the end of November, or the start of November, our last game, we were playing an effective soccer, I thought. Yeah. And kind of adapting to what your style of play was.
Yeah.
Talk to me about valuing the little moments in that first season, because,
yeah,
you know, we talk about tying Augustana. First positive result we've had against Augustana,
yeah,
ever.
In
right?
history, yeah.
I mean, tying with Minnesota Crooks, retaining the Rock. I mean, yeah, just little things like that. How did you put importance on those and kind of transition that into team chemistry, saying, look at this, is what you're doing is working.
Yeah.
And what we can do in the future is beyond what we've accomplished, yeah, already.
Obviously going and getting the first win down in Winona was a really great energy and vibe. I think that when you look back at that game, there's moments where we really believe in how we can play, and there's moments where we revert back to, this isn't going to work. We're going to play the ball as far away from our goal as possible, and that's helpful. Mm-hmm. When I was a player, coaches used to say to me, a fastball forward is a fastball back. And I needed to kind of like give that to the team more. And I don't think it really sunk in until later in the season, when actually if you have the ball, you're controlling the game and you can take your time in the build-up to be able to maybe maneuver a team and accelerate out of a situation. And I think the Augustana game was a turning point that I think everybody who stayed with the program at that point, we did have some departures before that, but everybody at that point went, I see what we're doing now.
Yeah.
I believe in this now. And I think that was a really pivotal moment where we were playing a team that was up there fighting for, you know, first place. And for 40 minutes, you couldn't tell. Right. And, yeah. And you know, even to this weekend, you know, not to skip us forward to one, but against NDSU this weekend, there was this 35, 40 minute spell where we're playing. And, you know, for a second, you're like, which team's which,
right.
You know, here.
Yeah.
And I think that I want us to be a team that believes in playing soccer. And I grew up in a time back in England, and back in the 60s, 70s, 80s, in England, it was called the beautiful game. And I wanted to be that. I wanted to be the reason. I wanted to be exciting. I wanted to be the reason why you want to watch the game. You don't want to sit there and it be like, boop, 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 and nothing be exciting for you to connect to as a spectator. And if we can do that as a spectator, it means that the players are enjoying it. And I always want to talk about, like, I always say, what's this, why is it, and I don't know whether you played when you were younger or not, Nolan, we should have probably had that conversation before, but what's the reason that you went to play soccer a second time?
Mm.
When you were young.
Yeah.
And I talked to the recruits about that, and they always say, yeah, it was fun.
But returned you to the games, yeah.
When you're 5, 6, and you get a ball, the reason that you want to go and do it again is because it was fun.
Yeah.
And I think too many coaches forget that. And I want it to be that the training is the fun part of your day, that being part of a game, no matter what's going on, that we're trying to have some fun out there. And, you know, hopefully that shows.
Yeah. And first full off season, you're able to bring in a large freshman class, yeah, as well as a couple transfers. I wanted to key in on the two transfers, Lizzie Jarzeski and Lily Allen. Those are two players that you tried to recruit to MSU Billings. I believe Lily went to MSU Billings. I might be off.
She went for a visit.
For a visit.
Yeah. Lizzie was committed as I arrived as an assistant, and she was one of there was two or three people that I saw film wise that I tried to get to Billings, yeah, and she'd already signed at Idaho State, so it was kind of that like moment.
Yeah.
But to be here 5 years later, right, it's wild, right? It's like such a small world.
How cool is that to say? Yeah. A couple of players that I recruited 4 or 5 years ago, yeah, are now playing for me at a school that you were even, yeah, coaching at, yeah, right? And how cool is that to have that?
And there's a strange sort of connection with Lily as well, that Lily's sister played at Duluth, recognized me in the lineup when we were saying, you know, shaking hands, yeah, last year, because I'd coached her at ODP for one session. Like, how is that thing,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh yeah, hi, how are you, you know?
Yeah.
And then 6 months later, her sister's looking to transfer, and we connect.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh yeah, I remember, you know, you coached my sister. I was like, cool.
One time.
And then, yeah, and it's strange how these lives are interconnected, that Lily knows Lizzie. You know, I coached at Bluefield State down the road. Maddie Sharp, who's joined the program as well, is a transfer from Concord down in West Virginia, yep, 10 miles from my old house. You know, such a small soccer world.
Yeah. And, you know, heading into this season, I think the quote that stuck with me so much is the quote that you had in the preseason coaches poll, is that,
yeah,
you know, you're here to do something, not for something to do.
Yeah.
How do you implement that mindset as you head into the second season, where obviously you want to see an improvement in that win-loss column?
Yeah, bringing in the right energy. So all those transfers who've come to the program and the freshmen, even in their learning process, have stepped what I would call our floor up, right? I've got no idea where the ceiling is, just so we're clear.
Yeah.
In all my coaching career time, I really have no idea where this team can go, because it's kind of scary, that end. But the floor has definitely gone up,
yeah,
right? Where we've all said, hey, we've come in fitter. I had the most people pass my fitness tests ever, right? And all the time, including being an assistant. I've had the right attitudes. You know, I've had players who last year admitted it was a challenge for them culturally to try and adapt, come in and be like, coach, I got you. I trust you now. I wasn't sure how this was going to go down, but I'm in. And that's a big moment.
Mm-hmm.
When a player comes and says that to you, you're like, okay, you know, we've got something going on here. You know, I'm not sure what it is yet, but we've got something boiling. And I think yesterday's training session was one of the cool things that, you know, we were doing something quite intense with the passing, right? We were, the pace of how you play the pass, where you have to be as that ball arrives and how fast that ball goes out. And we were getting caught up in it a little bit, and we were struggling a little bit, and we were hitting the wrong foot at times and kind of like covering it up, right? And be, oh, well, we got through it. And I don't know where it came from. I said to the team, like, hey, so let's stop. Let's count now how many times we're hitting the right foot and we're getting the ball to go the right way. Now, all of a sudden, because there was a number to count, mm-hmm. everybody was on it, yeah. right? And I was like, okay, this is good. We've got there. And I think that the it had caught us out for the first time this year that I stopped them and said, why did it take me to give you a number to train at that level?
Mm-hmm.
When the last 6 weeks, we've been pushing to get there ourselves.
Yeah.
And they were like, yeah, we agree. And you saw it ripple through them of, we can do that now ourselves. I don't need to have somebody drag me up. I'm going to step forward and I'm going to lift you up with me.
Yeah.
And I think that's brilliant as a coach to see.
And I only have a couple more questions for you, Scott. I think, you know, one thing that I always look at when I look at you is your relationship with Richard. I mean, you've known each other forever, been best friends forever. He was with you at Bluefield. He's with you here.
Yeah.
What has he meant to you as not only as a coach, but also as a person? Because I feel like you guys just level each other out so well and you're able to work so well together.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's helping our goalkeepers. But, you know, how has that relationship with him, you know, transformed over the course of your guys' lives? Because you played together, you've known each other forever, and now you're coaching together.
Do you know the story or not?
I don't know if I know the full story.
Well,
I know the people watching don't know the full story.
That's also true. Well, he is someone who I met at university, freshman, first day. He's come from an entirely geographical different part of the country to me.
Yeah.
I'm from up north. He's from down south. He drove a fast car. I drove a banger. He was all energy. I was kind of like, what's going on? And we didn't hit it off at all. I was like, what's going on? And he has the same story as me.
Yeah.
That we were both like, who is this guy? And we had that for a year where we were playing on a team and we were held together by other people and one guy in specifically who kind of kept us together, like emotionally and physically doing the same things. And for a year, it was like, why have we got to bring this guy along? And it's a great learning lesson for people going to university, for me.
Yeah.
Because now he's a brother. Like, literally, you know? And we went through an evolution in that friendship of him learning, him growing up, I'm growing up, and you rotate into this friendship together that, you know, over the course of 15, 20, and now into the 30 years, that's crazy to me right now, saying that out loud. But this is our 30th year of knowing each other. To be able to recognize someone who is sports crazy, right? He is.
Yeah.
He will watch, you know, German U23 chess, right? If it's on the TV and it's competitive and he can learn something and absorb it, right?
Yeah.
To then be able to apply that to American sports, to be able to move to this country and be part of that soccer experience, but then to be able to say, well, hey, you get to watch film and scout a team. Like, he was born for this job,
mm-hmm.
you know, and he has a job in medical device design, and he has a job in database management. He has a job in all these other spheres that then brought that to the point that when COVID hit, it was a real opportunity for him to relocate to West Virginia. And that became something that he had the same experience as me. He literally came to one of my camps as a goalkeeper coach to help out and then said, I need to do this for my life. Right. And I'm so proud of the journey he's had in terms of the growth that he's had as a coach as well. You know, we promoted this year to associate head coach. Well deserved. And you could say, oh, well, yeah, he covers goalkeepers, but he does so much more. He does all of the video scouting. He's a resource for scouting and throwing you know, he spots things in videos that I don't, and I am pretty thorough. Like, he spots a flag moving weird, oh, they sped the video up. You know, like, stuff that you just, how did you see that? So to have the resources that he has and the abilities that he has to bring that and to support me, you know, I just, I love having him around, you know, and he is a balance to me as well, that when I say something that's a little bit out there, he can pull it in, I can lift him up and push him in a new direction, and he just jumps on it. And, you know, having him on board helps the team, but also helps me, and I, hopefully I help him too, you know. And then the wider coaching set, I'm so proud of my staff right now. You know, I've got two former players on my coaching staff, and I've got a player who's come straight out of college on my coaching staff, and the energy that they bring, along with Richard, is, it's phenomenal. And it's allowed me to really be a head coach, not a coach spread out over everything, and that's really helped this year too.
Yeah, and you know, I think maybe my last question for you, it's probably the hardest hitting one that I'll have. Outside of friends and family, top thing that you miss about living in NP?
That's such a strange question. Friends, family, Dandelion and Burdock. It's an unrecognized soda drink that is, and custard creams. If anybody's in England right now, if you've got a custard cream biscuit, my address is available on the website. You can post me some. I'll even pay the tariffs, right? I'm that in. No, having parents come to visit, it's the small things that are different. Yeah. Like, just, you know, acknowledging words that are different, like trash and bin and rubbish. Things that you forget about and then get reminded when people come to visit.
Yeah.
Dandelion and Burdock is basically like an elite level Dr. Pepper. Next level Dr. Pepper.
Okay.
And it's like a herbal soda.
Hmm.
And I didn't even regularly drink it in England, but there'll be a day where you just wake up and you're like, I need a Dandelion and Burdock, and they're not available here. So yeah, it's strange but fun.
I was like, so send that to Scott Forster.
I'm not sure you can post fluids anymore. This no, sort of cans. I'm not sure how that works, but like, maybe, yeah. Yeah, and I found it once. Sometimes you can find it in these world supermarkets or places like, so if I ever see them or I pass one of those, you know, the coach is getting diverted for me to go and find Dan Lambert.
Yeah, I was like, well, when we're on the road, we'll know that.
Yeah,
if there's an international grocery, that's what we'll do.
We have to call in.
Yeah, right on. Cool. That's all the questions.
Thanks, sir.
Yeah, appreciate you.